We Love Movies with Gordon Hayden.
Now, this week on We Love Movies, our guests are Domhnall Gleeson and Lenny Abrahamson. Their new film is The Little Stranger and tells the story of Dr. Faraday, played by Gleeson. He's the son of a housemaid who has built a life of quite respectability as a country doctor. But during the long hot summer of 1948, he's called to a patient at Hundreds Hall, where his mother once worked. The hall has been the home to the Ayres family for more than two centuries, but is now in decline and its inhabitants are haunted by something more ominous than a dying way of life. When he takes on his new patient, Faraday has no idea how closely and how disturbingly the family's story is about to become entwined with his own. Before we hear from Domhnall Gleeson and Lenny Abrahamson, here is a clip from The Little Stranger.
How did you find the patient, Doctor?
Mrs. Ayres.
Mother, this is Dr. Faraday. He thinks we're brutes.
A little under the weather. I imagine she'll be quite well by tomorrow.
You'd observe a change in Betty yet. This house works on people. Girls come here like specks of grit. 10 years later, they leave as pearls.
I expect Dr. Faraday's thinking Betty won't stick it out for 10 years. These girls rather work in factories these days, and who can blame them?
As it happens, I was thinking of my mother. She was a maid here before I was born.
Well, I do hope she enjoyed her time.
Now, when We Love Movies, here is Domhnall Gleeson telling us about what attracted him to the role of Dr. Faraday.
I was just thrilled by every small revelation of who he is, what his history is, and the developing relationship with Caroline, and also what's going on in the house. I kept on being surprised by what it was as well as what was happening. And that was the thrill as I went through it, and continually thinking I had a grasp on it and then not, and thinking I knew who was responsible or what was going on, and constantly being proved wrong in a way that wasn't cheap, but that was just more and more and more interesting as it went on, all the way up to a film which actually climaxes on the last page, which is really hard to do. Normally, you know, a lot of films, the start of the third act is the most exciting part, you know, and then you're like, oh, okay, we're just tying up loose ends. This film goes all the way to the last page, the last image, the last word, and I thought that was kind of exceptional.
Here is Lenny Abrahamson, the director of The Little Stranger, telling us about working with Domhnall Gleeson once again.
I go back a long way with Domhnall, and I'm, you know, I just love working with him, and I think he's done something fantastic in this film, because Faraday is uncomfortable. He is, his whole position is difficult. Domhnall himself has so much kind of warmth, you know, as an actor, that that's something that I think I knew that whatever he did, there would be that glimpse of something in him which would humanize him for an audience. And his journey through the film is a dark one, so you really need that that sort of fundamental connection between him and the audience.
And finally, here is Domhnall Gleeson telling us what audiences can expect from The Little Stranger.
In terms of what's to enjoy in the film, I mean, I really hope that whodunit sort of vibe, that what is going on, like a psychological thriller of it being very intense. I mean, it's funny at times as well. There's like an odd sense of humor wrapped up inside of it. There's this bubbling sense of things could go wrong, desperately wrong at any minute. And you realize early that physical threat is also part of the thing here. Early on in the film, something happens which tells us people can get hurt and people are going to get hurt here. And the promise of that conclusion of why this is happening, of what is this little stranger in the house that is making everything so off and wrong and sick and driving people towards their worst end. What is that? And I think that just, that remains compelling at every turn, because they try and save each other through love, they try and save each other through understanding, through cruelty at times, and nothing seems to be working.
So there's Domhnall Gleeson telling you why you should head along to see The Little Stranger out in cinemas this weekend. Himself and Lenny Abrahamson have obviously got a good working relationship since they worked together on Frank from a few years ago. Well, to delve a little bit more into The Little Stranger now, I'm joined by Chris Wasser from The Herald. Chris, what's been very interesting about what the likes of Lenny and Domhnall have had to say about The Little Stranger, they don't really come out and say it's a full-on horror. It's almost like, well, by saying it's a full-on horror might give people a certain expectation. So it seems like it's nearly a hard film to categorise.
Yeah, and that is interesting that they themselves have actually admitted that, you know, it's not really a horror, but, you know, it's more of a gothic drama. And the one thing I thought since, you know, this all started, since we saw the first trailer and, you know, people have been talking about the book for a number of years now, is that this is a difficult film to market. And, you know, Ruth Wilson was saying it, Donald Gleeson, Lenny Abramson, they all know it. And when you watch the trailer, I mean, you could be forgiven. I mean, I think some audience members might go along to this film and feel a little bit cheated, perhaps, because, you know, the trailers do kind of sell you this almost heart-stopping thriller horror film. And then if you look at the poster, you're expecting something like, you know, a scandalous, frothy period drama. You know, there is a bit of a, you know, is it Downton Abbey? Is it The Shining? Well, it's actually a combination, a very strange combination of both. You know, I myself would call it a gothic drama. And I think that if you look, the point to remember is this, that if you haven't read the novel, then you kind of have to forget everything you think you know about the film, or that you've seen from clips, or that you might have heard from other reviews, and just know that it is actually unlike anything else. And it's also a Lenny Abramson film. So in a sense, you know, you kind of know what you're getting, in a sense that his films, they don't really hit you over the head with the plot and with the themes. You kind of have to fall into them a little bit and allow yourself to fall into them. Like what Richard did, or Garage, or Frank. He sets up these beautiful little worlds, you know, often, you know, based on books. So he's kind of working, you know, with an adaptation, but he's creating these worlds that take a while to fall into. But once you are there, it is spellbinding.
Because the plot to it, you could kind of feel, have I seen elements of this before? Because you've got the doctor who arrives at the stately home. And while he's there, it's almost like, could I be forgiven for saying, it's almost like sort of starts playing detective in a way. Like, what is really going on?
Yeah, that's true. That is true. And you know, you're never really sure what to make of him either. I mean, at first, when you first meet Dr. Faraday, you think, you know, it's Donald Gleeson. He has to be okay. But the longer we, you know, the more time we spend in his company, we start to see, you know, he's quite an unhinged individual. There's an awful lot going on in there. And we're not really sure who to trust either. And again, going back to that trailer, it kind of makes, you know, Ruth Wilson's character, Caroline, who becomes, you know, the object of Dr. Faraday's obsessions almost. You know, he just, the reason he keeps going back to Hunter's Hall is so he can spend more time with Caroline. And the trailer's kind of, you know, sold us the Ayres family, Hunter's Hall, as something of, you know, these are almost a demonic-like family. But no, there's an awful lot going on in there. As I said, it is a bit of a ghost story in one sense, but it's also a film about, you know, shifting class structures. It's a film about family life in post-war Britain. You know, when people were still coming to terms with the horrors of World War II, and certainly Will Poulter's character Roderick, who owns Hunter's Hall, he's both mentally and physically scarred by the war. So we kind of, you know, every time he comes in, we kind of get a sense of, you know, what that war did to this country. And Dr. Faraday is kind of just exploring the horrors for himself. So it is more than just a haunted house story. It is more of a ghost, more than a ghost story. But that said, there are moments in this film that did stay with me for several nights after watching it. You know, it is quite chilling at times.
Chris, there's so much expectation for Lenny Abrahamson's new film, bearing in mind his last one was Room, and of course that got so many different nominations, and of course it fared extremely well at the Oscars, Brie Larson picking up an award for Best Actress. The Little Stranger, though, this film feels like it's a different beast altogether. How do you think, though, you said audience will find it very difficult what to make of it, do you think this could have the legs to hopefully carry it through to the award season and maybe rack up a few nominations?
No, I actually don't. And I think it's unclear how, you know, Irish and European audiences will respond to this. Hopefully with the positive buzz that there's been, you know, with the lads doing promo over the last few weeks, you know, that will translate into ticket sales and it will be all good. But it is off to a slow and not very great start in America in terms of ticket sales. And again, that might be because, you know, it's a difficult film to market, but it also might be because, you know, people just don't want this kind of film. You know, they don't want to go along to, you know, a period drama that's all dressed up as something of a supernatural haunted house story too. You know, maybe it's just not the right time. I think we might look back at it. I mean, and I'm saying this as someone who loved the film. I thought it was quite beautiful to look at. I thought Abramson just got the best out of Donald Gleason. He got the best out of Ruth Wilson. I quite liked, you know, the mystery and, you know, having to spend 2 hours trying to figure out what the hell was going on, and the fact that, you know, for days afterwards, even, you know, the ending just left a mark. It's, you know, it's like, it's actually weeks since I've seen the thing, you know, and I'm still scratching my head about it, and that's a sign of a good mystery right there. But in terms of looking back in it, let's say in 5 or 10 years, I think there is not a danger, but there is a sense that we might look back in it and say that was the Lenny Abramson film that didn't quite catch on. And we're not really sure. Again, it could be down to the marketing. It could be down to, you know, 101 different things. But that was the time when Lenny Abramson said, you know, look, I'm getting offers from, you know, 10 or 20 different studios here, but screw it. This is the film that I want to make at this point in my career. If no one goes to see it, fair enough. It might be a case of that.
Okay, well, the thing is, he's a man very much in demand. And look, if this doesn't, catch on as like they hope it will, look, he's still going to be very, very busy with the amount of projects that he's got in development. Out of 10 for The Little Stranger, Chris?
Yeah, I think, again, it will divide opinion. It probably already has. But I thought it was an enormously impressive piece of filmmaking. So well scripted, so well acted. And it was just so tense and atmospheric and at times really, really disturbing without resorting to kind of silly jump scares and the like. So I thought it was, you know, it was great. Eight out of ten.
8 out of 10 for The Little Stranger, playing in cinemas this weekend. Up next is Mile 22. Mark Wahlberg, he stars in this. He reteams with director Peter Berg. This is their, I think, third film together now. But anyway, it's their fourth film, actually.
Fourth, yeah.
Yeah, that's right, isn't it? Well, in the film, Wahlberg plays an elite American intelligence officer aided by a top-secret tactical command unit as he tries to smuggle a mysterious police officer with sensitive information out of the country. Before we hear what Chris thought of it, here's a clip.
That's my asset.
Who is he?
Lee Knorr.
I don't want to know his name. I don't know what he does for a living. I want to know, who is he?
A loner. No kids, no family, 100% accurate and reliable.
You mark him or he mark you?
I marked him.
He says he has the exact locations of all 6 sets of CZ. He's logged it on a disc. He says only if we get him out of the country and give him asylum will he open the disc.
You going to deal with this or do you want me to handle it?
I got it.
This is serious, right?
Oh, very.
So, Chris, Mile 22 is out. I'm not going to lie to you. I don't have high hopes for this. This is one of those films where I go, I think we've seen this all being done before, where someone who has very sensitive information is being transported out of the country. Dare I say, Sicario may have done this an awful lot more, a lot better. And it's a well-worn plot. Is there anything here, Chris, at all?
In short, no. And I need to commend you there as well on your synopsis of the plot, because although this film is only just barely 90 minutes long, I did spend most of those 90 minutes going, what is going on? I am so confused. And usually, I'm a fan of the Mark Wahlberg and Peter Berg partnership. As you said, this is the fourth time they've worked together. Lone Survivor, grand, but Deepwater Horizon and Patriot's Day, both real-life stories, both, you know, dealing with tragic stories, tragic themes, and both, in a way, disaster films, were very impressive stories. I think Mark Wahlberg, you know, it's very, sometimes he's quite difficult to warm to. It's very easy not to like him at times, but he's a very good actor when he needs to be. And Peter Berg, then, likewise, is a very good storyteller when he shows up. We're just going to forget about, you know, all of the bad blockbusters he's made. But I thought I was expecting more from this, but it's just all over the place. I mean, for a start, the plot doesn't really make any sense. And secondly, the editing in this film is some of the worst that I've seen in a major studio picture in a very long time. You know, you've got Mark Wahlberg playing this almost caricature of a character. Do you remember The Accountant with Ben Affleck?
Yeah.
And how, you know, it sets up this accountant and, you know, slash sniper fella as, you know, someone with quite a busy background, and that he's autistic and there's a reason for, you know, his quirks and his idiosyncrasies. With this, we're told that, you know, James Silver, Mark Wahlberg's character, he's gifted. He's, you know, he's not like anybody else, and he has this weird tic where he keeps snapping on a rubber band at his wrist. But it never goes any deeper than that. you just have Mark Wahlberg going around talking really fast, not making much sense in the middle of, you know, trying to get the police officer, you know, out of the embassy over to the airfield. It's just so confusing.
Oh, no. Well, listen, Chris, we won't put anyone any more through the pain of this film. This is one that sounds like avoid it. And look, if you are tempted to see it, maybe hold off until it becomes available online. Chris, out of 10 for Mile 22?
I thought it was in an awful state. It's very choppy. It's quite confusing. It's, you know, it actually plays out like one big trailer for itself. And not even John Malkovich showing up in a very funny wig and a pair of Converse can save the day. So I just think it is unwatchable. 2 out of 10.
Oh, dear God. Well, there you go. Avoid at all costs. Chris will be back a little later on as he'll be taking a look at this. The really strange pairing of Eli Roth, the man behind the Hostel films and Cabin Fever. Well, Spielberg has hired him to make this wannabe new Amblin film starring Cate Blanchett and Jack Black. The film in question is called The House with the Clock in Its Walls, based on a very popular children's book. We'll be talking more about that a little later on.
We Love Movies with Gordon Hayden.
Now We Love Movies, we're going to take a look at the movie news, and Andy McCarroll joins me. Andy, straight out of the gate, we're going to chat about The Joker, because we've been talking on the programme over a number of weeks about how they were gearing up for production, that Todd Phillips, the director behind the Hangover trilogy, he was the man set to task on bringing us this prequel to The Joker, how he became the Clown Prince. And you kind of go, oh God, do we need to see that really? But what has given a lot of people hope is that Joaquin Phoenix has been cast as the Joker. So it makes you think that there might be something to the script and that they might be able to pull this off, even though a lot of people feel it's a bad idea. Pictures have been released of him shooting the film, Andy. What was your reaction to seeing him?
I'm really very interested in it now. I like that they haven't gone the conventional route with the reveal where, you know, what they've done with Heath Ledger, what they've done with Jared Leto, where it was like a full in-character picture of him. Here, he looks kind of more like, you know, kind of Robert De Niro in Taxi Driver, or even Andy Kaufman in Taxi. Just that kind of broken-looking, you know, desperate man. And I think it's very, very clever that they're building momentum towards, like, the film's not out till October next year, and I think they're being very clever in that they're, you know, they're getting a conversation started before, you know, the big reveal, which they can, you know, they've a whole year nearly to do that now. But as you said, for me, Joaquin Phoenix as casting as the Joker is brilliant. Like, this is a guy who was just about to shoot Doctor Strange and turned it down because he thought the script was a bit generic. So to turn around and do a Joker film, there must be something really special in this to latch him on. Of course, you have people like Scorsese were involved, Robert De Niro as well. So I'm very curious to see. This looks like it's going to be something very, very different. They want to go as far away from Jared Leto's Joker take as possible, which can only be a good thing. So I'm really interested to see now what they do and what was the hook that got Joaquin Phoenix to do this film.
Yeah, Jared Leto's version, it's almost like a bit of plastic punk there, the way he's given his take of the Clown Prince. Joaquin Phoenix, from the pictures that have been taken of him on set, Andy, for those that haven't seen the pictures, can you describe what he looks like?
Yeah, he's kind of got nearly shoulder length hair. The hair is very much about the same length as Heath Ledger's in The Joker. But he's wearing this, you know, kind of green military jacket as well. He's got this very vacant expression. He's lost a lot of weight as well since we last seen him in You Were Never Really Here. Mm-hmm. And even the reveal of the character name, like call him Arthur, something kind of as bland and as dull as that. Apologies to anyone called Arthur who's listening, but you're probably 70 years old. But he's just, there's something about it. He's got this, like, Joaquin Phoenix is a tremendous actor, and I'm looking at the picture of him now. He just has this psychotic look behind his eyes that, you know, he could take this film in any direction. This could be fantastic or it could be an absolute disaster. You wouldn't know, but I'm far more interested in this than I would be in a Suicide Squad sequel or a Jared Leto spin-off on its own.
Yeah, big time, Andy, I hear you. Now, speaking of other reveals, this week as well we got to see the first look of Taron Egerton as Elton John. So that he's shooting this upcoming biopic titled Rocket Man. Now, I think for over the years, this was always mooted like it was going to happen. I think Tom Hardy might have flirted with the idea of playing Elton John. But we've got Taron Egerton, who can sing to some degree, if anyone remembers his performance as the gorilla in Sing. What did you make of him dressed up as Elton John?
Yeah, I think it definitely looks the part. I think I'm very interested, like you said, what the singing voice is going to be. And I'm very interested to see what direction they kind of go with, because, you know, there's the, you know,
the pop sensation Elton John that, you know, everybody's mother enjoys. And then there's this really kind of dark side, you know, the drink and drug side to it. So I'm very interested to see what way this is going to go with it. And I think as well with Dexter Fletcher directing, he directed Eddie the Eagle. And now obviously what happened with Bohemian Rhapsody, the Queen film, he had to take over directing duties on that. He's become the kind of go-to guy for musical biopics. So I think this could be, you know, another layer to the kind of Elton John mythos as well. And I think with Tom Hardy, initially it was attracted to the script. So I think he said it was a much kind of darker take than he was expecting. So I think we're going to see something very different to a kind of the Elton John, you know, Rocket Man, I'm Still Standing kind of pop sensation. I think they're really going to delve into, you know, a side of Elton John that we haven't really seen.
God, that will be a fascinating take. Now, next up, Andy, Dwayne Johnson. Look, he is one of Hollywood's big leading men at the moment, even if he's churning out an awful lot of derivative nonsense. But his father, like, there's talk of him getting his own film, but not starring in it, but a biopic.
Yeah, Rocky Johnson, Rock's father, he was one of the first black wrestling heavyweight champions, and he was kind of a very big proponent during the civil rights movement. He, you know, he sparred with Muhammad Ali and George Foreman, and you know, around the time he was kind of coming up in the 60s, he was very much an outcast because of the color of his skin. So he was kind of more obstacles outside of the ring than in. And his story is really, really interesting, up to the point, obviously, you know, his son became like the biggest movie star on the planet. No word on who's going to play him yet. I don't know whether The Rock would be interested in kind of playing his own father or if that's something that would appeal to him. But I think anyone who steps into that role and having, you know, to appease The Rock and Rocky Johnson himself, that's not something I'd be very envious of having to step in to do.
Now, finally, Andy, in our movie news, we're going to discuss Die Hard 6. Just when you thought the series had been dead and buried after that last film, A Good Day to Die Hard, directed by John Moore, it was awful, awful, awful. But look, the Die Hard series has been in free fall for some time now. And you would just think, look, they just let it go. It's not working anymore. But Len Wiseman, who helmed the fourth film, he has been trying to make this prequel come sequel for some time. So it's like this old John McClane looking back at his past when he was a young man, when he first started out as a cop in the New York Police Department. So they finally revealed the name of the film, Andy, and it doesn't have Die Hard in the title.
No, it's just going to be called McClane. Previously, it was going to be called Die Hard Year One, but they've changed it to just McClane now. And they've also confirmed that they're not going to de-age Bruce Willis. It's going to be a younger actor playing him. But I think, like you said, that's going to take away from like the elements before. Like, the whole first film was great because he was this kind of, he wasn't the super cop. He was like an everyman caught in the situation. If you'd build a backstory where he's this, you know, badass cop the whole way through his career and then dealing with whatever he's dealing with now, I just can't see this working, especially with Len Wiseman. It's such an uninspired choice. Like Die Hard 4.0 or Live Free or Die Hard, whatever it was called, was just meh. That was kind of when the series started to go off the rail. They turned him into Superman. Yeah. He's crashing, you know, cars into helicopters. The whole appeal of him was that he wasn't, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger. He wasn't this big hulking superhero. He was the kind of everyman who was, you know, he got punched at hurt. He didn't take 15 punches in the head and then do backflips and get onto it. But again, this is just something that really I don't feel should be made. And you said about the last film, like I turned it off 20 minutes in and Bruce Willis had a look in his face that made me think he wanted to do the same.
Oh yeah, like even when he was on the promotional trail for when he was over in the UK, he kept questioning certain presenters. I mean, I think he was on the one show saying, well, look, what do you think of the title for this? And it was almost, you knew he was annoyed with the film in question. Andy, thank you so much. You'll be back a little later on as we'll be discussing who could possibly take over as Superman from Henry Cavill.
We Love Movies with Gordon Hayden.
That's it for part one of We Love Movies, but coming up in part two, we'll be going through... That's it for part one of We Love Movies, but coming up in part two, we'll be reviewing The House with a Clock in Its Walls. It's the new film from director Eli Roth, produced by Steven Spielberg and starring Jack Black and Cate Blanchett. That's coming up very shortly.